This is the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 362. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Well, that was a season.
Did it. We made it through. Finished with a win.
You finished with a win? Where was that team all year, by the way? Like, that was everything that we thought that they could be when we started talking about expectations, you know, before the season started. And when we thought, well, there is a possibility that they could be a 12-win team, a 13-win team. They would look like that team.
It's frustrating when you wait the entire season and then the last two games gets you to the team that you hope that they would be all season long. I don't know exactly how to feel about it because, you know, in a way it provides fuel to everybody's particular thought on how the off season should go, right? Because gosh, you could still go with the idea of blow it up because you're telling me that this team had all this talent and the coaches couldn't find a way to put it together sooner than the final two games. And on the other hand, you're like, well, they seem to have it figured out now, so bring it back and let's just do this all next year.
I have a large amount of latitude when it comes to what people think about what should be done this offseason. Like, I really, you could come at me with just about anything. And honestly, it's probably a valid viewpoint because there's points in some of the post-game presser and Pete's end of the year presser where I'm listening to him or Russ and I'm like, yeah, exactly. It finally came together and this is what it's supposed to look like. And of course, you know, you got to do these things and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then there's parts of it throughout those pressers where he's like, yeah, and I don't know. I mean, the defense just didn't come together as soon as we wanted. And we got to figure that out. And it's like, yeah, it's been 2 years of that. Like we need to figure that out like 2 years ago. How are we just now realizing that that's an issue that needs to be fixed? Like, get rid of this bum. I'm sick of this crap. Like, so I absolutely can understand where everybody's coming from. And then the weird part is too, is ask everybody 3 weeks ago, right after the Bears game, and see what people have to say regarding what needs to be done this offseason. I would have said burn the VMAC to the ground too, because that building's obviously haunted as well. Like, but then you have these last two performances, and now that changes your whole viewpoint.
Well, and really, it does hinge around the Bears game, doesn't it? But there were so many things that went wrong for the team to lose that game against the Bears. You could almost, if you were to just chalk that up to a fluky loss, this team wins 5 of their last 6 games. If they get that win over the Bears.
Yeah, even 4 out of 6 is pretty good, but it wasn't a fluky loss because you watch that team coming down the stretch of that game, and you're like, oh yeah, they're going to do this. They're going to do this. They're going to do this. And you could almost just line it out, like how they were going to give that game away. And then they freaking did it. And that's a pattern of behavior.
All Jason Myers has to do is make a field goal.
Right. But again, there's just no consistency with this team overall throughout the entire season. And maybe that's the real issue or the real problem in terms of trying to figure out what to do, because when the team is right and they play the right way that they're capable of playing, they're a Super Bowl contender. And then when they're on the other side of things and not playing well, are they better than the Lions?
At the very least, they're the last place team in the division, which is something that they haven't been for Pete Carroll's entire tenure. So this is a first for him too. But yeah, really, when you look at the record of the team and then you look at this last game and even look at these two teams, the Seahawks, yes, it was a 38-30 win over the Arizona Cardinals, but Russell Wilson also spotted the Cardinals 14 points in this game too. So this game would have been a blowout if the Seahawks are able to take care of the football.
In one of the few games that they haven't, right? So there is another level of inconsistency that pops up when everything else is going well. Now, all of a sudden, Russ is turning the ball over with a dumb pass to Homer that like sailed over his head. And then, you know, just the regular old 3-step drop, get the ball out of your hand, and he just doesn't do it. And then we got to deal with Chandler Jones again for the millionth time.
Although for the way things started for Jones, it wasn't a Chandler Jones game like a lot of the other Chandler Jones games.
Yeah. So then you see the offense come out and play a whale of a game. Russ looked good. Three touchdown passes and that rushing touchdown where after he scored on that rushing touchdown, I was like, oh yeah, he'll be back next year for sure.
The way he was flexing and celebrating, it's like, yeah, that was the emotion that I think we've really wanted to see between Pete and Russ. And it did. It made you feel like this is the way that it's supposed to look in terms of, you know, the way Russ wants it to look, the way Pete wants it to look. It feels like they're on the same page. Man, they have to get an offensive line. They have to put a more competent line out there. And it only has to be to fractional degrees, right? Because you bring up Jones and the types of games that he's had in the past. He hits Russ on that first drop back where he fumbles. And then he only touches him one other time the entire game.
Yeah.
And it's because they have a run game with Penny and they're moving guys with the offensive line. And yeah, the offensive line wasn't like Russ had to do quite a bit of dancing around in this game too. So it wasn't perfect.
No, it wasn't perfect. But he also too on a number of plays was hitting the check down.
Right.
Taking the quick read and really helping himself.
DK was doing slants over the middle.
Yeah, that happened. There were slants over the middle that were easy completions, you know, getting the tight end involved and just, and again, the actually running the football and doing that effectively, which I know I never really was one of the let Russ cookers, like that sort of thing. I'm definitely more in the mindset of, I think that winning football is good defense, run the hell out of the ball and be really efficient with your quarterback play. That is the formula for winning football games forever. Like that's how it's always been. It's how it always will be. It's one in the trenches, be able to run the hell out of the football. And you saw this offensive line in this game against a playoff caliber team, even though I think they're totally overrated and overhyped. Absolutely. Just run it down their throat. And it happened to be Rashad Penny back there that was doing the running, but the offensive line dominated. And then you see how the rest of the game opens up.
You do have to give credit to Penny, like that dagger at the end of the game, the 62-yard run where, yeah, it was a huge hole. He beats Buda Baker and gets the touchdown. So there, I think there is some credit to give to Penny in this. And there's going to be the question of what do you do with him this offseason?
1 year minimum deal if he'll take it. And if he doesn't, see you later. This is such fool's gold. These last like five games.
The reason why I ask about it too is partly because of you hear Pete talk about on 710 after this game, doing his coach's show and talking about the amount of salary cap that the team has going into this offseason. Mm-hmm. And he really seems to put a premium on keeping guys who have been here. And really, that's kind of how it's been. Now, it's a question of which guys are the right guys to keep. I have some opinions there. We can get into that now, or if you want to wait. But I think the point is, and that Pete's trying to make, is that money isn't going to go quite as far in free agency as many fans would like to think.
Yeah, and it comes all down to how many of your own dudes do you bring back, just like you said. Well, we could talk about the Quandre Diggs injury a little bit and how that affects that whole cap number situation. That was one of the most heartbreaking things I've ever seen on a football field. Like, this dude's such a warrior, came to play, bet on himself, and was one quarter away from cashing in. And then that happens.
Yeah, in a game where he didn't need to play for anything. He wasn't playing for the playoffs. He's already been selected for the Pro Bowl, had nothing to prove for next season. And man, it's stuff like that. It when I see his face, you feel it. Like, that is not fair. Like, for what he had, for everything that he went through, like, he shouldn't have to endure an injury like that.
No, it couldn't have happened to, you know, it couldn't have happened to a better dude. And like that, usually that phrase is meant in a different way, right? Like, that guy, you know, married so-and-so, couldn't have happened to a better dude. Great gal, right? That he married. This is the kind of the bizarro opposite world of that statement. It couldn't have happened to a better dude. Like, why did this have to happen to Quandre, man? Like, it was so frustrating. But getting back to the salary cap thing, now with that injury, that makes it a lot easier to bring him back on probably a lesser deal than you were going to before.
I hate that.
I do too.
At the same time, I also think that I want to pay him whatever he was going to make anyway. But, you know, but then I can talk myself the other direction too and say, you know, you're already paying Jamal Adams. Like, you're going to have so much money wrapped up into two safety spots. Mm-hmm. Okay, if that's the way you're going to do it, then you're going to have to, like, DJ Reed's not going to come back then because you're going to end up having to pay him 10 plus million too. So you have to make a decision there, Quandre or DJ Reed.
I don't think it's an either or, but yeah, you'd have to pay both of those guys.
I think it's an either or if you also want to sign offensive linemen or defensive linemen, at least through free agency.
I don't know.
Getting rid of Bobby Wagner.
I don't think any of these are
Adam Emmert for GM.
Number one, the cap is magic. We've talked about it every single offseason. Okay. So there's a way to fit all these guys, but there's other dudes that I would not bring back in order to bring back Quandre. DJ Reed is one that on the right deal. Sure. But I'm not totally sold on him. Then
what if the range, for DJ Reed? I'm trying to do my best estimate here going into free agency this offseason, mm-hmm. and to what these guys could potentially make. And I'm ballparking DJ Reed 8 to 11 million a year, even though could be higher, because who's to say he didn't have a better year than Shaq Griffin did for the Seahawks?
That's the thing is people always seem to come out and overpay for somebody like that. There's always somebody, right? Like the Giants or somebody that just spend extra dumb money for the sake of spending extra dumb money.
And when I hear DJ Reed in his postseason press conference say, well, I'd like to be back if the price is right.
If the number's right. Yeah, exactly. He's looking to get paid and he should. He should be looking to get paid.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I'm rooting for him to get paid. I just don't know that that's a guy you bring back. I mean, maybe you do. I'd be more apt to not bring back Penny, not bring back Everett. Who are some of the other guys that are up here this year?
Probably the one that could see the biggest jump is Rasheem Green. And he's a guy who is making under $1 million this year, but you know, 6.5 sacks this last year, kind of can play the outside, play the inside. I think we could see him get like an $8 to $11 million per year number.
Maybe. I wouldn't pay that for an inconsistent amount of production. And again, we paid Jaron Reed in a situation similar to that after he had a career year in sacks. You don't pay a guy on a contract year who has a career year in sacks. You just don't do it.
The only thing that I could think of with Green is, because I think back to Cam Chancellor and the season that he had before he got paid, and a lot of us looked at that number in that offseason, we're like, whoa, Cam got paid. Is that okay? And with a guy like Green, I could see almost a similar thing just with his age. And if they're projecting him to be the type of guy over the next few years that could grow into that role, and thinking that a long-term deal at, you know, an average of that could end up being a steal 3-4 years down the road.
Negative. Rasheem Green is a very average NFL player. Like that's one of the guys you don't overpay. We already tried this experiment of paying a bunch of medium tier guys money on the defensive line. And what you got was a really mediocre defensive line. Like, so I don't know. Absolutely not. I wouldn't pay Rasheem Green that kind of money. Look, you need to go out. Well, number one, defensive line would not be the first place that I'd spend my money. I would spend all my money on offensive line, all of it. Like that's pretty much it. And then the rest of it, you can fill in, whether it's the draft or bargains or whatever it is. Right. But there is no way I'm investing anywhere else, not corner, not safety, not linebacker, nowhere else. I'm not nowhere else. until the offensive line is fixed. And that starts with center. It starts with right tackle. It starts with maybe another guard, maybe a Dwayne Brown replacement. That's all that needs to be focused on, period. End of story. Because the team can put up 38 points like it did this last week against Arizona. If the offensive line is dominant, it can make whatever back that you throw back there look like the next coming of Sean Alexander, which is exactly what Penny looks like when he runs, by the way. I that's where I would put it, because then you can give up 30 points in a game like they did and still beat a playoff bound team.
Well, they put up 38 points with Dwayne Brown at left tackle, with Ethan Posick at center, with an undrafted free agent at right tackle.
The answer.
I'm just saying that if your argument is to pay a bunch of those guys, do you then pay some of the places where you look? I wonder if...
No, this is easy. This is easy when it comes to those guys. What was the number one issue with the Seattle Seahawks this year? We just talked about it at the beginning of the podcast.
Inconsistency.
Why would you go out and pay the inconsistent players to come back once again? Ethan Posick is wildly inconsistent. Jake Curran... Who knows with that dude? Fine, bring him back for a bag of footballs. Oh, well, I don't care.
He is back. He was an undrafted free agent. He's under contract.
I'm saying they could cut him, but yeah, bring him back. So sure, bring him back. Go out and spend at right tackle. Go out and spend at center. And the one guy I might play for another 1 year deal would be Dwayne Brown. Sounds like he's open to the idea. And if he's willing to come back on a 1 year deal, I would maybe do that, unless I can have a clear upgrade at left tackle with somebody younger. And maybe that guy is out there. Maybe it's Armstead. Who knows? Maybe they're not. And if they're not, then you bring back Dwayne Brown, because he has been consistent.
Right.
He's the one dude who has been consistent. So I would pay him. No way in hell am I paying Ethan Posick and bringing him back. None. Zero.
And he made $3 million last year. Brandon Schell.
That was $2.5 million too much.
Yeah, and the thing was, Posick wasn't even your starter. It was Kyle Fuller who was the starting center to start the year.
There you go. Not even consistent enough to beat out Kyle freaking Fuller. Yeah,
who is also up for a new deal here in free agency. But the other guys, so you have four guys who are coming to the end of their rookie contract. I mentioned Rashim Green. Rashad Penny is the other one who we know. Mm-hmm. Will Dissly coming to the end of his rookie contract.
Yeah.
What kind of deal does he get? And does he stay with the team? Is it a one-year thing? Is it a $4 to $7 million tight end thing? Because he does have his ability to pass block. It's definitely beneficial. In addition, you get some of the pass catching too.
Okay. Everybody knows my unabashed love for fellow Montanan, Will Dissly. I love him. I love having him on the team. All of that. I can tell you right now, there's no way I'd bring Will Dissly back. Can't stay healthy, isn't a difference maker on the field, and
can't stay healthy. He had two like devastating leg injuries, and he's put together. Yeah. Hasn't it been two back-to-back seasons now where he's finished
season and a half or something like that?
Yeah,
no thanks. And it took away the little bit of explosiveness that he had the past game. He's not the same difference maker in the past game that he was early in his career before the injuries. And he heard Pete in the presser talk about who knows who the next star is going to be, like Daryl Taylor that comes up there. Like, maybe it's Colby Parkinson. I bet you they would bring back Everett, which it'll probably be a similar contract to this last year.
If I had a tight end to give $6 million to, I give it to Dissly over Everett.
What? Why?
Oh, because maybe Dissly doesn't drop touchdowns that are perfectly into his hands in the end zone.
He can't get open for them to even throw the ball to him to see if he's going to catch the touchdowns or not.
I like his blocking ability better.
Sure, a little bit. That's fine. You can find blocking tight ends anywhere.
Okay. Well, if Colby's going to be the new pass catching tight end, then I think that you can spend the money on
Gerald Everett is the pass catching tight end.
Parkinson is going to take over next year. You heard it from Pete.
Yeah, maybe. But no, it pains me to say it. I just don't think that, I mean, if you're really looking to upgrade this team, I just don't see you paying money there. And I guess that brings us to another part of the conversation. I hear, Pete saying, just some tweaks, right? Just a little bit. They're so close. And I see other people, like I saw an article, can they just change three players and not be a Super Bowl contender? No, it's gotta be, there's gotta be a lot more changes than that. They are close and there are some pieces that are working really well or can work really well, but there's a lot that has to go.
This is going to be a wild offseason to see how they do that. Oh, the other guy I didn't mention, Jamarco Jones. He's the fourth guy from that draft class.
No, don't pay him either.
You know, I put Jamarco Jones and Phil Haynes kind of in the same category. Like if they want to come back on 1 year deals for backup type roles, then that's fine. I mean, Kyle Fuller was playing on a 1 year deal, right? I mean, you had, offensive linemen in that $1 million range. That's for backup level players. Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. On that level.
But I don't see where guys like Jones or Haynes have put enough tape up to where other teams are coveting them, like George Fant, for instance.
Right. Especially with Fant having measurables that are very desirable, right?
Right.
Like that's kind of played into that. So no, and I think you're 100% right on Jones and Haynes in that regard. And you could probably bring them back for very little money. It's a lot like the Penny thing. I don't mind them coming back for
What about a Leonard Fournette type deal? 1 year, $3 million. I think that's what Fournette got leaving after he left Jacksonville. And
Jacksonville.
I just wonder if there's enough questions around Penny the same kind of way there were questions around Fournette about health and that sort of thing. Because Fournette put up good numbers. He was essentially the Jaguars' entire offense with Bortles the year that they went to the championship game.
Yeah.
And he also never got a big deal.
Also far more healthy than Penny.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. He's put up good seasons every year, whereas it wasn't just the final five or six games of his contract year.
Yeah. And look, this isn't just trying to hate on Penny either.
No, I want that. I want that. I want a full year of that. That would be amazing.
Sure. Yeah. He seems like a really nice kid who's really just tried as hard as he could to do what he could. But the results are what the results are. And so when I'm talking about, you know, who should be back next year, and Penny's probably one of those that is the most polarizing for people. I mean, we've got our good buddy Michael Paul in the Ring of Honor.
Yeah, he's finally able to celebrate now.
Yeah, he'd probably have Penny dress in a gold jacket every week when he came out onto the field. Like there's some people that are so fired up and are so bought in to the new Rashad Penny. You know, post AP's magic touch. Like I just don't buy it. I really don't. I mean, when I said he runs like Alexander, it's soft for his size and does well when the holes are there. He's a little faster. And so that's
Sean
nice.
Sean was fast in his early years. I mean,
he's fast-ish.
Yeah. You give him a hole.
But Penny's faster.
And yeah, his ability to make the cuts. Now Sean had, I thought, better vision. Although I think Penny has shown that he has improved there. And then Sean always ran tough inside the red zone.
Toughish. Yeah.
Way tougher. That's why he had all those touchdowns.
No, that's not why he had all those touchdowns.
That's part of the reason why he had all those touchdowns, apart from his Hall of Fame offensive line.
Okay. Look, he's the Seahawks version of Emmett Smith, dude. Like, so I'm going to have a hard time giving him a lot of credit.
I know we seem to run into this discussion all the time when it comes to Sean Alexander and Emmett Smith. But the point is that
and Rashad Penny, put them all in the same pile.
Because even if you think about how the Seahawks don't have a first round draft pick for this 2022 draft.
Yeah.
If you were to pay Penny a 1 year deal based on what the number 10 overall pick would probably get, then you're getting your first round running back. You don't have to draft necessarily. I mean, you can still draft running backs later on in the draft anyway, just because you always need those guys. You don't know what's going to happen with Chris Carson this offseason. Maybe he can come back. Maybe you can't. If there's one thing that this season has shown us late in the year, it's that when Russ has a running back and a running game that they can count on consistently, that's when the team can be at its best. So they have to go into a season with that idea that they can't allow the offense to sputter with, you know, whether or not it's consistency with the offensive line or at the running back spot.
The biggest problem with consistency at the running back spot has been health, clearly. If you brought back Penny for 1 year, $3 million, that's on the upper end of okay. But okay, I would probably be fine with that. I bet you somebody pays him a lot more than that. I really do. But as far as, well, you don't have a first round pick, so where's that first round running back? Why on God's green earth would you draft a running back with a first round pick?
Oh, no, I'm not Why? Saying that you would, but I'm saying if, you know, you look at some of those guys like Jonathan Taylor, who was, you know, early second round. If you look at Josh Jacobs,
early second round,
who went in the first round for the Raiders, you know, that I'm saying that you are essentially paying for that type of caliber, but you don't mm-hmm. have to use the pick.
Right. Well, you could pay a lot less, use a much later pick and get 90% of the production, especially if you build the offensive line wisely.
Or you can use those late picks on corner or offensive line. I'm saying, why use a draft pick when you could bring back a dude, hopefully at a level that works for both sides, where we don't go, you know, because, yeah, the $3 million number I threw out there as kind of the uncomfortable number where you start to go, yeah, that's tough.
You hit it on the head. You hit it on the head with that number, because that's exactly how it felt to me. If he came back at $3 million, again, it's on the upper end of what I'd want to pay, and he put in a full healthy season, I don't even care. He's not going to put up 300 yards a game, you know, like he has these last 4 or 5 weeks, yeah, 170
right? 170 yards
it's
a game.
It's not going to happen. Yeah. All right. But if he was just healthy for the whole year, next year, came back on the $3 million, I would be happy with that.
Yeah.
Or as healthy as you can expect a running back to be. Because I'll be honest, the Chris Carson part of this discussion, we're at a point in his career now that you can't count on him any more than you can count on Penny.
And that's the other thing. Do you bring back two running backs? Well, Carson's well, he's under contract. But then does it make you nervous having two guys and then depth guys like Dallas who, you know, and even if you brought back Collins under another veteran deal, I mean, you're bringing back guys who, yeah, they're okay, but you can't count on them to be the workhorse like you would want Carson or Penny to be.
Right. I mean, this is 2 years in a row that we pinned our hopes to a Carson Penny backfield and have scrambled for half the season to find. Yeah,
they've never both been healthy at the same time.
No. And sometimes neither healthy.
Right.
I mean, that's happened quite a bit too. So. No, it's tough to think about having that, pinning your hopes to that. I guess what you'd have to do is bring in a veteran back, you know, in that Alex Collins spot that has a proven track record of being maybe not spectacular, but healthy week in and week out. Like
Frank Gore.
Sure. I mean, I think Frank Gore's, you know, obviously not in the league anymore and all that, but it's kind of that type of guy, right?
No, I meant literal Frank Gore, not a guy like him. So
did he just have like a boxing match or something?
I don't remember. Yeah. Hey, if Adrian Peterson can still go out there for a game, you can probably bring back Gore.
You can pencil in Frank Gore for 17,
but don't do that. No,
but don't do that. Yeah. It's a difficult conundrum in a lot of ways, but also too, you either have to have like core tenets and beliefs in the way football is played or not. And to me, backs are almost a dime a dozen. There's some very special ones, no doubt. But for the most part, if you've got a great offensive line, almost any back is going to look pretty darn good. Like top 10, top five.
It does help though to have those guys with just a little bit more than what you see from some of the other guys.
But for the money or the draft capital, like that amount, that incremental difference of better, does that match up with the money?
Well, and you know, look at the Niners. They always seem to go find dudes that are undrafted, and I just don't understand why. Well, I think part of it is that the Seahawks just they seem to be tied to guys within their system or guys at a certain size and physical profile and not willing to go out and get some of those, I don't know, smaller, shiftier guys sometimes.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do there. I've heard a lot of people say, I was listening to Mike Salk's show a little bit yesterday, which I haven't listened to in, I don't know, probably over a year. And just to see what somebody who's sort of plugged into the Seahawks world is. I mean, obviously he's in Seattle. He covers the team daily, talks to the coach every week, all that stuff. Like, what does he think? And he definitely thinks you got to go after pass rushers. Like, that's where he wants to spend all his money. And okay, once you go off, you know, you go after the offensive lineman that you can, and you get that solved, whatever you have left over, sure, pour it into pass rush. But like that, it's a distant second to offensive line to me. And then everything else is a more, even more distant third or fourth, fifth option. Like, don't really care.
And really, even before this last game was what had me thinking that, you know, you have to find somebody else at safety. Yes, Diggs is a Pro Bowler, but if you're focusing on two areas, offensive line, defensive line, then that means that you might have to move on from a guy like Diggs or move on from DJ Reed. And because
I'd be more apt for that.
Yeah. Well, other than having a run game that complements Russell Wilson's game, there's one thing that jumped out to me from this season, and that is after they got rid of Trey Flowers, they have guys that can play cornerback in this defensive scheme. That, because Pete just asked them to not get beat deep. He's not asking them to get turnovers. He's not asking anything crazy. So you don't have to pay guys if you're not asking a whole lot from them.
When somebody like Josh Jones and Warrior comes in at the end of the game and functions, that, what does that tell you?
Yeah, Mike Jackson.
Exactly. All those guys.
And Sidney Jones, who couldn't stay on a team in Philly or in Jacksonville, comes here and looks like a fine corner.
He looks like he can play. Yeah, like he's not amazing, but he can play. And I'm all for just finding dudes that can play on the back end. Because, you know, we talked about a while ago. We did the chicken and the egg thing last season where, well, what comes first? A great secondary or a great defensive line? What makes the other? Well, we found out the answer. It's the defensive line that makes the secondary.
Right.
And you can have Sidney Jones and whatever cast off from the 49ers that they pull in, you know, this offseason to play the other corner and look good, as long as the defensive line and the pass rush looks good.
Yeah, just don't get hung up on the next Akella Witherspoon, who is a castaway that you're ultimately going to cast away like Witherspoon or Trey Flowers.
Can't all be winners. Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess they're quick to move on from Witherspoon. They're quick-ish to move on from, the dude.
Dunbar,
yeah.
They were quick to get rid of the dude from the Eagles that came in after Maxwell.
Right. That guy.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe I'm blanking on his name.
Kerry. No, he wasn't Eagles. He was Ravens, wasn't he? Kerry.
Both.
Oh, okay.
He played for both the Ravens and the Eagles. Yeah. Kerry Williams.
Yeah. Kerry Williams.
But yeah, they moved on quickly. They cycle through DBs all the time. Like that's a place that you can, you know, find guys. I would say if you're really focusing on corner, I mean, slot corner is where they've struggled the most. And maybe that's a scheme thing, which we've talked a lot about personnel. I mean, let's talk coaching staff a little bit, because Pete Carroll, after this game, took his catfish out of his pants and slapped it on the podium. It was like, this is how you win football games. I've been right all along. You can all suck this. He was almost gleeful in the way that he was talking about the way the season finished up.
Yeah, and I think he can do that to an extent, but at the same time, I hope that he recognizes that there were issues on this team that he may have to address, especially on the defensive side of the ball. 2 years back to back where you get off to these slow starts and it's not starting to come together until late in the season. That seems to me that you have a problem there that needs to be fixed, whether it's with coaching, whether it's how the players are worked into the particular scheme. There's something there that I don't think I could put my finger on without knowing the ins and outs of the team, but I can't think that can go unaddressed another year. And Pete was asked about the coordinators, and he wasn't willing to, obviously he didn't want to talk about it. And really, if you think about the coordinators who were fired in the past, it was about a week and a half after the final game before you found out that the team was moving on from particular coaches.
Sure. One thing that I did hear Pete talk about in one of his interviews was, well, one of the things that gives me some solace in going forward is that I think Pete does get it now, is in terms of the problems, right? And knowing where to look first. First off, when I was talking about him crowing at the end of, or during his post-game press conference, yeah, we all know he's not going anywhere.
No.
Anywhere.
And he is for sure back. I think he heard a little bit too much, let Russ cook last season, and was ready to show people that this is what he's about and how it works.
Right. And that we're doing it next season and he will be back. Like, there's no doubt in my mind, Pete Carroll is back in Seattle next year, for better or for worse.
With Russ.
With Russ. Oh, for sure with Russ. Because Russ hurt his trade value so much this year with the offseason antics, the finger injury, you know, basically the second half of last season and the rough stretch through this season, that I don't think there's a team that's going to give you the Godfather offer that you would want for a franchise quarterback in his prime. The market's just not there. He played himself out of that. So he'll be back.
Has to be a little bit humbling too when you hear the national guys bring up the possibility for a Russ trade and they're like, well, do you even want Russ if you're such and such team?
Exactly. So yeah, it'll be Pete and Russ. By the way,
yes, you do. You do still want Russ.
Yes, you do. And we will, and it's going to be glorious. So the thing being is that he is talking about the right things, in my opinion, about what needs to be focused on. One of the things he brought up almost right away was the consistency aspect. I'm really glad that he was thinking about that. About the second thing he mentioned was the slow starts on defense, and we got to figure that out. I know how you figure that out. Get rid of Ken Norton Jr. There's got to be some heads that roll after a 7-10 season, and it's going to be his. It should be his, because there's legit DC candidates out there that could make this defense unbelievably better just by being here with their scheme. And there's a track record in a history of defensive minded head coaches who've been awesome defensive coordinators, go and be a head coach somewhere, fail, come back to being a defensive coordinator and crush it. And Vic Fangio's at the top of my list and Brian Flores are at the top of my list. Those two dudes all day, make a full court press to bring those dudes in and get Ken Norton out of there so that maybe you can play consistent defense no matter who's out there. Because if you look at Fangio's defense this last year, the entire team was injured. The entire team.
Yeah.
Like they played with Band-Aids all year and still were good and carried that team. That's the type of defensive coordinator that we need. And I don't want to hear about, well, does he play 3-4, not a 4-3? And I was like, who gives a catfish? It works. Just bring him in and be like, do it.
Well, the thing is, with the Seahawks defense, do you even know if they play a 3-4 or a 4-3? Because it's the type of, you know, Pete shifts. You see guys like Benson Mayoa in the linebacker spot dropping into coverage. So it is right. Kind of a flexible type front with that regard. So I think you could bring in a defensive coordinator like one of those guys who would, I think, still be compatible with what Pete wants to do. And yeah, I think that is the move that feels like the compromise of, okay, well, Pete's back. Well, something has to happen, right? And yeah, that definitely seems like a move that could be made. And two, I mean, even with Jamal Adams, when you invest in that position the way that you do, it didn't feel like they had a really good idea. Now, maybe they were saving it for the second half of the season, like they were with, I don't know if they were saving Dunlap for the second half of the season, because
I think that's a fascinating conversation, by the way, but yes.
But, you know, just how much were they saving for the second half of the season? Who knows? But what did that spark in you?
Oh, just the Dunlap situation. And first, you know, let's address the Adams thing. Yeah, you didn't get the production that you're hoping for out of Jamal Adams this last year. And look, I know everybody, especially since the trade, no, oh, box safety, can't be doing that. It's terrible. What a terrible deal. You can't do it. You can't give up too first for a box safety. Oh, right. And then they drool over Honey Badger all day. Right. So it works. You can have a player that is important to your team and very productive and is a box safety. You just have to utilize them correctly. And clearly, Ken Norton doesn't know what the hell he's doing with that. It's very clear because Jamal Adams can be a difference maker for this team. You're paying him. You're locked up to it. So you might as well bring in somebody that can get the maximum out of him. And another good example of Ken Norton being bad at his job when it comes to being a DC is Carlos Dunlap. Whatever they were doing in terms of the defensive line rotation to keep Dunlap off the field as much as they were, so he couldn't get in a rhythm, which is what he expressly said was the issue in all of his press conferences leading up to his burst at the end of the season when they finally started playing him regularly. He needed the rhythm of being out there consistently, and they wouldn't do it because they were quote unquote saving them or whatever it was. No, they were just not using him correctly.
Yeah, I would have to go back early on in the season because he has the strange thing is that his snap counts are relatively even through the first six games as the last six games in the season. But you think back to those first six games and he didn't have those impact type moments. It could have been a Dunlap issue too through the first half of the season. And then maybe taking away some of his snaps toward the middle of the season got him to bounce back late in the season. I don't know.
A very consistent player throughout his entire career. I have a hard time believing that he just went in the tank for like 5 weeks and they had to bench him. That seems, if we're playing the what's more likely game,
right?
That seems less likely.
It does seem less likely. And maybe they went out and got too many guys to play on the defensive line this last offseason. Because, gosh, what did we see from Kerry Hyder this year?
Exactly what I told you would see when he got signed. I mean, I remember going back and looking at his stuff and being like, oh, he lucked into like six sacks. This isn't a disruptive player.
Yeah, you did say that.
I didn't understand that signing at all. And you saw the results of it. Now, do you hang your hat on the idea that Daryl Taylor is going to take the next step next year after he hit the quote unquote rookie wall? And I know it wasn't his rookie year, but it basically was his rookie year. Maybe, but you got to bring in probably two more guys if you can. We'll see what they do.
And rather than bring in another guy, see, that's why I think that they'll probably end up paying guys like Rasheem Green and Will Dissly, because it's just, they tend to bring the guys back that they know can work within their system. Rather than, because what would you rather pay a guy like Rasheem Green, or a guy who had some production last year that in free agency is going to command $8 million a year and not know exactly how he's going to fit in the system?
Depends on the guy,
obviously.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, at this point, if the other guy would be another just league average replacement player on the defensive line, then okay, I guess if you're paying that much for that position, then sure, bring back Green. I mean, if that's the going rate.
Right.
But I don't know. If you can bring in a guy who maybe has been productive the majority of his career, got in a bad situation last year, and is a bit more of a bargain, yeah, bring that guy in.
And those guys may become a little bit cheaper too. Guys like Robert Kimdichie, who played in the middle and he was okay.
He was fine.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Fine.
You would rather pay $2 million to a guy like that than pay $8 million for two extra sacks.
Yes, that you may or may not get.
Offensive line, defensive line. Well, you know, one of the guys who we haven't really talked about is Ryan Neal, who's up for a new deal this offseason.
100% bring back Ryan Neal.
Yeah, I like him. Again, and I don't know that, if he's really put enough out there that another team's going to be paying him a large amount of money.
I wouldn't think so.
But if you're bringing back player. Diggs and you've got Jamal Adams, it's like with all these guys, there's a certain number where you don't go over.
Okay. So Diggs has played two seasons, right?
Right.
For the Seahawks.
Yeah.
Adams has played two seasons for the Seahawks.
Yeah.
So a combined four seasons.
And math checks out.
How many of those have they played wire to wire and healthy?
Yeah, zero.
Maybe one.
if you combine them. But yeah, Jamal hasn't had one full healthy season himself.
Right. So
whereas Diggs has been healthy,
Ryan Neal is very valuable.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Not only that, but he's a very versatile player. You can throw him down in the slot if you need to. You can throw him outside if you need to. He's a good tackler. He's an energy guy. He's one of your dudes that you brought up through your program. Ryan Neal's one of the guys I would pay.
Other guys who should be coming back next year, either restricted free agents or exclusive rights free agents. Bless Austin, restricted free agent. Brian Monet, restricted free agent. Those are guys that, well, if another team were to sign them, you probably wouldn't get a draft pick based on the contract that you would offer them. But I don't think anybody's going to match deals for either of those guys necessarily. Penny Hart, John Reed are your exclusive rights free agents. So they should be back. Oh, here's one we should talk about. Geno Smith.
Yeah. Seattle backup quarterbacks to Russell Wilson are a little cursed, man.
Yeah. How long had he been off the plane coming back from Arizona? Does he get picked up for a DUI that same night at 2:00 in the morning?
It must have been a hell of a party on the plane.
Man.
I did see a headline saying that Gino would like you to reserve judgment till
yes
everything kind of comes out here.
He did put that on Twitter, but then on Tuesday we hear from TMZ that he was a huge jerk during his arrest and even told one of the officers that you have a little D and it looks like 3 asterisks, so I'm going to say that he probably said
catfish.
Good job, you're very good at sleuthing that out. Yeah, I don't know, we'll see what happens, but that doesn't look good. I don't know. Do you even want to pay the type of money that you pay Geno Smith to come back? I mean, for real, you could get that sort of production out of your backup quarterback. You could bring Duck Hodges in and get that kind of production.
You still beat the Jaguars with Duck Hodges as your backup quarterback.
Right. So there's a place that you can save some
money. Although Indy couldn't beat the Jaguars somehow, but...
Yeah,
I guess that goes to show you Indy probably has a backup quarterback as their starting quarterback.
Oh, geez, Louise. Yeah, that whole Wentz conversation is interesting as well. You could also argue that they wouldn't even be in playoff contention without Carson Wentz.
Oh, I know.
If they rolled it back with Phillip Rivers or something like that. But yeah, I don't see Geno coming back, especially after this legal incident, especially if it turns out to not look good. That's just tough.
Well, the Seahawks, they also signed their futures contracts to a number of players. Of the guys that I recognize on this list, Cody Thompson, who had a heck of a play. We've barely even talked about this game against the Cardinals. But how about the near punt block by Travis Homer? Then the ball goes to the ground. Cody Thompson ends up recovering. That was actually a big turning point in this game against the Cardinals, because at the way the Cards came out in the second half, they get the touchdown. Russ throws the pick, essentially gifts them another 7 points. That turned it to help allow kind of really that momentum to shift over to the Seahawks side that they just carried through the rest of the game.
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's a huge play. Yeah, we haven't talked a lot about the game itself. I mean, I think... The big reason why is we're all like, yeah, cool. We beat the Cardinals. Screw them.
Yeah.
And again, let me reiterate how much I hate that field. I mean, how many players are you going to rob us of that stupid field that's built out an Indian burial ground? I mean, Cam, Cliff, Sherm, Diggs.
Yeah. Although Diggs's injury, it sounds like it was a clean break. It sounds like he's going to be back. Well, you mentioned this earlier. It does seem like Diggs should be able to bounce back.
Yeah, that's the hope. Sounds like it could have been a lot worse than it was. So, yeah, here's rooting for him.
You know what? I cannot get over this, though. Just how close this team was to actually being a playoff team. And
yeah,
and maybe we're getting into NFC West watch territory. Should we just get to the second half of the show?
Yeah, I think so. I think you're ready. It feels like to me that you are ready.
I held
for the second
off this
half of the
long.
Show.
I have some more things I want to talk about.
Great. Does it start with
catfish?
The Rams?
Yes. Yes, it does. Because that stupid team can't even knock off.
Wait, hold on. What? We're not even to the second half of the show yet.
Okay, let's get there. Well, so I do actually have to trigger the sound to get us to the second half of the show before you give the okay that we're in the second half of the show?
Yeah, dude. We got to start it like for reals. We got to be consistent. Okay. Yeah.
Just making sure, because man, oh man, the stupid Los Angeles Rams, the 49ers spot them a 17-point lead and they still can't even close it out. And the reason why this makes me so mad is that I look at what we did to the Cardinals. I look at the Rams at what they've done down the stretch. I look at the Niners, who we already beat twice. And these are the three teams representing the division in the playoffs. Yep. And right now I could make the case that the Seahawks are playing better football than any of those teams. And we lost a stupid game to the Bears. We lost a stupid game to the Titans. And, you know, the Saints game was stupid enough too, that you could throw that in there. Win those three games, which were easily within reach to win. And you're playing in the playoffs right now.
Yeah. Shoot. You could probably get away with only winning two of those.
Probably.
I think you would have bet in, because you held the tiebreaker over the Niners.
Yeah. But then they finished at 10-7.
And Seattle, did they? I thought they finished at 9-8.
No.
Okay. And the worst part about the stupid Rams, they can't do anything right for us ever. Like, they're so selfish. The stupid LA team, like, just beat the Niners, keep them out, make me feel better. No, they can't do that. And then the worst part about it is now you hear everybody talk about the Niners. Niners.
Nobody wants to play the Niners in the playoffs.
Nobody. Jimmy G's back. What do they do with Trey Lance? Boop-a-doop-a-doo. Kyle Shanahan with his sub 500 record is now the greatest again. Like, now I got to listen to that crap again. All because Matt Stafford can't play clutch football for the catfishing life of him. He's going up this weekend to play the Cardinals to try to get his first ever playoff victory. And do you have any confidence that that's going to happen? The only reason I do is because the Cardinals are freaking falling on their face, just like we knew they would going down this stretch. And the Niners are delightfully mediocre. It is. It's annoying. It's so annoying.
You have unclutch Cliff Kingsbury going up against unclutch Matt Stafford. Yeah, the 49ers might be the most dangerous team if you're talking about NFC West teams, but they go to play the Cowboys, and I think that they'll probably lose the first round.
How are the Niners the most dangerous team? I don't get it.
Among these three teams?
I don't know that I can discernibly put one above another.
I don't either. If I had to root for one, I would pick the Cardinals, which is kind of gross. But so this brings me, Hong Kong Hawk sent in his list of teams that he's rooting for in the playoffs in order.
All right.
I want to see how this lines up with everybody here.
Okay.
Number one, Buffalo. I think that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah,
you're onto that one.
I'm in. This list is genius. Well,
number two, you know, with your dad being a KC fan, Hong Kong Hawk has KC number two.
Okay.
Cincy number three.
Yep.
Tennessee four.
Okay.
Vegas five. Okay. Philly six.
All right.
Philly's in the playoffs?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know.
Because don't make me look this up and find out that Philly is 9-8 and the Seahawks would have been in over Philly.
I think they are 9-8. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I don't even want to look now. Yeah, they're 9. Oh my gosh. The Eagles were 9-8.
Yeah.
That would be pretty wild to have the whole division make the playoffs.
It was close. It was really close. And then you factor in just Russ's injury. So he legit misses three games. And then
probably should have missed five.
Is MIA for the next three that he comes back. You know, he's not Russell Wilson.
So those are the top six that Hong Kong Hawk's rooting for. Number seven, COVID cancels the Super Bowl, which almost seems like a legit possibility.
Isn't that number one?
It feels like number one to me. Like, the Seahawks aren't in the playoffs. Go ahead and cancel it. I don't care. Yeah. Eight, comet collides with the Earth.
Which... There's a long list of reasons why that might be the best thing.
Number nine. Now we're getting into the teams that obviously we would not root for. Pittsburgh, Dallas, Arizona, Green Bay, the Whiners, which, pro tip from Hong Kong Hawk, is that you do not use any team names, because then you get advertisements based on those team names. So he is always using Whiners, Lambs, And he uses Cheatriots, obviously, for the Patriots.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then he uses team names for, or the town names for a lot of the other teams. And it,
there you go.
He's
so he gets more like he's travel targeted ads than he does like for those teams that we don't want to talk about.
So, yeah. Pro tip. That's don't smart. Say any team names that aren't the Seahawks in your Facebook feed just to avoid any ads that you don't want to see.
Look at that. Hong Kong Hawk blew me. Not only is his rooting guide pretty much spot on, but he also is an algorithm beater.
I would say, though, in terms of the teams, I would mix it up a little bit. Tennessee's my number one.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
I feel like they're kind of underdoggy.
I don't want to see Ryan Tannehill win as many Super Bowls as Russell Wilson to this point in their careers, even though they came in the same draft.
I'm okay with it. That doesn't bother me. Tannehill's not getting the credit anyway. It'd be Derrick Henry or Vrabel.
Yeah, I guess.
Nobody gives Tannehill any credit. Stop it.
I'm very meh about the Titans overall.
They're not going to win the Super Bowl anyway, so it doesn't even matter. But that's my rooting interest is usually with, you know, the underdog teams. I you know what? I could root for Philly. I got my Sooner quarterback. With
that's
Hurts.
True. I could see that for you. I can't root for Philly because I have been very much a proponent of Jalen Hurts not being a quarterback. So I can't have him winning playoff games.
No, you can't have that. Well, don't they have to play? They play Tampa right out of the gate then, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have to worry about that.
I don't.
I'm in on Buffalo. I could root for Buffalo.
Yeah, why not?
Cincy, I can root for Joe Burrow.
Look, both the Bills and the Bengals have had such a rough time when it comes to winning Super Bowls. I mean, they've got a lot of Super Bowl L's. Either one of them could finally get a win here and it would feel all right. And not only that, but obviously I'm a big Josh Allen guy. And, you know, Joey Franchise seems like a cool guy, like a guy you can get behind.
Are there any of the teams that Hong Kong Hawk listed below Comet Earth Collision that you would elevate above that level?
No, never and forever.
No?
No.
Tampa, you would elevate Tampa. Maybe?
I mean, I wasn't mad to see Brady win one more without Belichick just so that I kind of validate like the fact that he's not a cheater and he's a good player and all that. Now that that's over, I don't need to see BA winning anything else. Nah, I'm out.
Earth's destruction over BA getting another ring. Gotcha.
Doesn't that sound right?
It's hard to argue with, but yeah. I could actually put Arizona. I could elevate them.
What?
Yeah.
All right. What's Clinton's number? I'm going to need that right now. I need a new co-host. You're fired.
My sports hate for the Cardinals is not to the same level as the Niners or Rams.
It doesn't have to be. It's still my sports hate is still larger for the Cardinals than for a Comet.
Yeah.
The Comet doesn't play on a home field that has wrecked our team and stolen a Super Bowl from us.
Yeah. I don't think that's the team's fault. That's the stadium's fault. But yeah,
that team plays in that stadium. That is home to that team. Like if I was president tomorrow and I got to demo one building, that'd be number one on the list.
And I think that maybe I think I might be able to elevate Green Bay above it. I'm talking about earth destruction level. Like which teams can I elevate above that? And I think I could bring up the Cardinals and the Packers.
If it was anybody but Aaron Rodgers playing quarterback for the Packers, then yeah,
I think it's
bring back Favre. And I'm like, sure.
I don't know. Yeah. Okay.
Aaron just rubs me the wrong way. He hasn't necessarily. Yeah. Like I can't really.
Well, he doesn't rub me the right way.
I'm sorry, man. I can't get into Green Bay that way.
Well, it is. It does. I am curious to hear, though, from the Flockers out there who their teams are going to be in the playoffs this year. Or maybe you're just totally out.
What is the worst Super Bowl matchup possible? Rams.
Patriots. Yep.
I don't know.
Rams Steelers. Rams Steelers would be bad.
That's the worst. 100%. Not even close. There you go. What's the best?
The best would be
Buffalo Philly. Buffalo Philly.
Cincy Philly.
God. Yeah. Almost all the NFC teams are like unpalatable.
Yeah, Philly is the only team in the NFC that rises to the to that level of being okay to root for.
Right. Yeah. Where my sports hate doesn't just want them to, you know, go one and done, even though they will. You're right. Okay.
Well, on the on the comment list, Philly's the only NFC team.
True.
It goes Buffalo, KC, Cincy, Tennessee, Vegas.
Yeah. I could care less about Vegas. Please go away.
I kind of like the story with the coach taking over.
I guess.
And the way they got in.
Yeah. That was wild, man.
That was a wild Sunday.
Yeah.
Watching the Colts lose to the Jags and then all of the potential that it opened up just from that one move to allow the Steelers to potentially get in. Well, they ultimately got in. But if that game were to end in a tie, then the Steelers would have been out. And it nearly ended in a tie.
Yeah.
All the Chargers had to do was stop the Raiders from running the football because they weren't going to throw it. And they couldn't stop them from running the ball to get close enough to kick the field goal.
Well, which reminds me of reason number 446 that we should fire Ken Norton this offseason. Speaking of not being able to stop the run, if you give up a 3rd and 18 on a give up play,
oh my gosh.
When somebody calls that a give up play, a draw on 3rd and 18, that doesn't mean you should give up the first down. That means the other team has given up, and that's a for sure stop.
James Conner ran for 18 and a half yards on a 3rd and 18.
The fourth down defense was just, oh my goodness. The fourth down defense and the 3rd and 18, like right there. See you later. Here's your pink slip.
Yeah. Rasheem Green in the neutral zone on a 4th and 4, giving up a first down.
For no reason.
Yep. You're off the team too. You can sign somewhere else.
Well, you can be on the team. It's just, we're not going to give you $1 zillion.
You can still be on the team, but you have to sign a team friendly deal. That's your penalty.
Makes you wonder how many of these guys are going to take a hometown discount, though, because how many of these guys are all like, yep, I want to be back, and like seem to really mean it.
Yeah. Like Al Woods, like who else did we hear from? I didn't get that sense from Reed.
He's the only one. Everybody else is like, yep,
bring me back.
I love it here.
Yeah. I think that's a good thing.
Yeah.
People who are not taking a hometown discount to stay with this show are new members of the flock.
Heck yeah, man. We've got new ones. Even after a disappointing 7-10 finish to the season.
Even after a disappointing season, we've still got our executive producers, DCH, Dustin Mock, Brian Shaw, Kevin Watterson. But we've also got new to the group, Brian Wallace, in at $12 a month. Brian says, freeloading is over. This is my favorite Hawks podcast, and I'd like to thank you both for keeping me entertained these past few seasons, especially during these COVID times. Adam, may I recommend at least one more shot of Jaeger or tequila before each recording so that you are extra feisty. Catfish! The Whiners, Lambs, and Cliffberries. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. I appreciate you making us your favorite Seahawks podcast, man, and getting in the flock. Like, this is a great example to all of your other cheapskates out there that can't bother to pay for the value that we provide for you each and every week. And that I think we're looking to possibly up this next coming season. We're going to give you more value.
That's right. We are going to try and give you as much value as possible. And so thanks for providing value to the show. David Croyle also back in, $5 a month. Welcome back, David.
Welcome back, David. And look, and I can't even be mad about a hiatus from being a little flocker. Like, if you got to hop out of the flock for a minute for whatever reason, and then hop back in. As long as you're hopping back in, we're good.
And he hopped back in and gave a raise from previous. So yeah, that's awesome.
It's fantastic, man.
It makes up for the 1-star review that we got this past week.
Let me guess. They don't like me.
Heard great things about this podcast. Oh, the headline, new listener, already gone. Heard great things about this podcast, then listened to a couple episodes and couldn't handle it. Brandon is pretty good, but I cannot handle listening to Adam for an hour and a half. Very obnoxious about his takes. He called it.
Some people call it obnoxious. Some people say confident. I mean, however you want to. Yeah. But again, like every 1-star guy that's ever come through with the review, I have a sneaking suspicion you're going to be back in about a year and you're going to up that to at least a 3.
Well, and see, that's the thing. Like, you have to give the show some time. Like if it's not your thing right away, you've got to work into it. Now, some people, they listen the first time and they go, oh, this is awesome. This is exactly, I love these guys. They both have different perspectives and the dynamic is fun. But other people, now, I want to give credit to the person who told this listener about the show, because obviously people are out there doing their job saying, hey, you got to check out this show. And so if you are one of those people that told Jacob about this show, you have to let him know that, hey, you got to give it some more time, man.
Or not. I mean, if it's not Jacob's cup of tea, then that's fine.
If Jacob comes back and he gives it three more months of listening and still doesn't like the show, he's got to give it three more months.
Maybe that's what it is. I'd say maybe even just three more shows ought to get him.
Yeah. And then if still after 6 months, still you're still not there, got to go another six. And then if 1 year later, you still haven't gotten it and you're willing to admit that this show still isn't for you, give it one more year and then you're a dirty freeloader and then you better help support the show.
Exactly. Look, I just know for the handful of 1-star reviews we've gotten in nearly 10 years here, the vast majority of those have turned around. Like they get infected. Yeah. They can't stop listening. They keep tuning in and eventually they don't find me as obnoxious because they finally found some taste. So it usually works out for our benefit and for their benefit too. Like I have a feeling that, young man, what was it? Jacob. Sorry, dude. It's kind of like heroin. Like you're going to have a hard time getting off of this now.
Just wait. I can't wait to see this turn back into a 3-star review or 4, maybe 5.
I was going to say at least a 3.
At least a 3.
I just don't know. Like, because usually that's kind of the critique, right? It's like I have a Skip Bayless take or an obnoxious take or
it's obnoxious to people who, well, anybody who has a definitive take that maybe isn't always right. And you're generally right.
That's what I was going to say. Like, I mean, you may not like the take, but 8 times out of 10,
you nail it. And so, yeah, after a while, you go, huh, maybe this guy, even though he is a little bit obnoxious with how right he thinks he is, he's actually usually right. And then,
the thing is that I don't think that I'm right. I just am. Right. So that's where that comes from. Yeah.
It is. It's where it comes
from. Look, it's hard being right. It's like,
it's hard to get used to somebody who always is right and wants to make sure that you know about it. So that's fine. Yeah.
Just ask Brittany how much fun it is to be around somebody who is always right all the time.
Hey, you know how long I've done the show with you? Since 2013. You think I know?
Right. Yeah. Well, you've been with me since kindergarten. So unfortunately, I think,
so 35 years, I've figured it out by now and we're still friends.
And we're still friends.
So, person who's given this show 2-3 weeks, stick with it a little bit longer. And like I'm saying, you could become a friend of Adam's for life.
You probably will.
Oh, shoot. I got to go pick up girls from the bus here shortly. All right. Well, thank you for the review. We always read the reviews, whether they're good or bad. They're usually good. But
look, and if you found a 1-star review to maybe not match your own idea of how many stars that we're worth, if you haven't written a review, get after it. It's better for our deal, be better for your deal. Help the show,
and you can always help the show by going to getintheflock.com, becoming a member of the flock. We'll be chatting throughout the off season. Talk about value you get. We're always in there on Facebook and the Discord talking Hawks, so it's just always ways to be a fan throughout the off season.
Absolutely.
All right. What do you say we get on to some do better and better at life? I do want to do Pick'em League. Well, I'll hold off. Make sure you keep on doing your picks, but we'll have to skip the Pick'em League for until next week. TinyPiecesOfSeahawksStuff.com. I'll have to do the giveaway for the next show. We got to get to do better and better at life.
All right, man. My do better this week is for our terrible luck when it comes to now this next season in getting the last place schedule that you should have going into 2022. I just saw their upcoming opponents and it's hard to judge strength of schedule, but overall this is not a cupcake last place schedule. It's looking like
we don't even get benefit of being a last place team and play some cupcakes like Jacksonville.
Doesn't feel like it. Here, I'll run through it. Niners, Cards, Rams, Falcons, Panthers. Okay, there's two cupcakes. Raiders, Broncos. I expect both those teams to be decent next year. Giants, Jets, two cupcakes.
Okay.
Then do your away games. Niners, Cardinals, Rams, Bucks, Saints, Chargers, Chiefs, and Lions, who will probably be better next year as well.
So it's we play the AFC West, which was probably the best. Well, I think they finished the same in terms of, or did they have a 9-8 team at the bottom? There were a couple divisions that had 9-8 teams at the bottom of their division, or 8-9 teams.
Yeah.
8-9 teams.
Yeah. Our luck this year, it's been terrible all year, just snake bit. And our luck for this year, do better.
Well, I think you already covered my do better, but I'm going to it anyway. I'm giving my do better to the stupid Arizona Cardinals stadium. There is not a stadium in the league. You ran down the list of names of all the players that stadium has wounded. And now to add Quandre Diggs to that list, man,
yeah.
You had to take out one of the best dudes on our team, like just one of the coolest guys. Man, that stadium, I'm ready to trade that stadium. Can we trade it with Oakland? Or no, Oakland doesn't have a team anymore. Vegas, the Chargers. I'm ready to trade the Cardinals out of this division because the stupid stadium keeps hurting our players. Do better.
And then add in the play that should not be talked about.
Oh, yeah. I'm not even going there.
That's what I'm saying. It gets worse.
I want this stadium out of my life.
Yeah. Asteroid. We need an asteroid to hit it.
They rescheduled the Super Bowl out of L.A. They move it to Arizona. Then the meteor hits the stadium, cancels the Super Bowl, and it fixes everything. All the problems solved.
Yes, absolutely.
We don't have to worry about who we're going to root for in the Super Bowl, and we never have to see that stadium again.
I love it. I absolutely love it. All right, man. My better at life than Skip Bayless this week is for a gal named Whitney Goodman, who wrote a book titled Toxic Positivity, Keeping It Real in a World Obsessed with Being Happy. And the article that talks about this, it starts out like this. Sick of the hashtag grateful, good vibes only crew? You're not alone. According to a new book, relentless positivity can be more toxic than you think. I'm in fashion at last, says a professional grouch. This is exactly what the world needs. This is exactly the way that I look at the world. Finally, somebody put it in book form and explained the philosophy the way it ought to be explained. That's right. Get your expectations low. Everything that good happens after that is a total win. It's the way you should live life. Be a little pissier, a little more negative, and, you know, everything will get better. It's the one thing I can't stand about Russ is it's toxic positivity. It's toxic positivity. Here's a little bit of negativity to balance that out. I love it. Whitney Goodman, better at life than Skip Bayless.
The life according to Eeyore and Oscar the Grouch. Two fictional characters to live your life by.
Absolutely.
My better at life this week is for a Seattle Kraken fan, Nadia, who went to a game a couple weeks back. And one of the things that she noticed was a mole on the neck of one of the equipment assistants for an opposing team. The Vancouver Canucks were in town and she was sitting behind the assistant and noticed that this mole was problematic through her medical training that she knew. That needed to be checked out. Turns out she got word to the coach and she was right. It was a type 2 malignant melanoma, which means that it was it hadn't penetrated the skin, according to this article. So no reason to cause cancer just yet, but right on the cusp of it. Because I have a medical degree and I know what I'm talking about. I'm just going off this article. But for Nadia, for recognizing this, for taking action, because, you could just sit there and ignore it. But she took action, helped save the guy's life. Nadia Popovici, better at life than Skip Bayless.
Can you imagine how that conversation went? Like, you tap the coach on the shoulder. Hey, dude, you have death on your neck, just so you know.
Get that checked out, please.
Yeah, your mole is not just gross, but probably deadly. Like, and, that'd be
and
hard.
And the opposing coach is like, this is a weird form of taunting that I have never experienced at any other venue before.
Yeah, but give her credit for broaching the subject, you know? Like, I don't ever want somebody to walk up to me and be like, you've got an ugly mole, dude. You might die.
And then to take that information, go, you know what? I should get this checked out because maybe you know what you're talking about.
So, yeah, good on her. Pretty cool.
Well, thanks to everybody for hanging in there throughout the season. Not the best season, but I do have a feeling that there is better seasons to come up ahead.
It definitely feels like there's a lot of hope on the horizon. May not be the change that we were all looking for, potentially, but I have a feeling that we're going to get it right, and we're going to have a much better year next year, and it's going to be a lot more fun sharing it with you guys. Been an awesome ride this year. Like Brandon said, can't say thank you enough. Appreciate you guys a ton.
We will be back throughout the off season doing shows. Can't wait to get to it. And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks.